From KXJZ in Sacramento, I'm Jeffrey Callison. A local high school madrigal choir heads to Wales soon for a top choral festival. Meet singers, the choir director, and of course, hear some beautiful songs today on Insight. Also today, the secrets of America's bluegrass banjo champion. For starters, don't worry about flashy fingering. That's not what it's about.
The left hand is just the peripheral magic stuff. All the great bluegrass banjo players like Earl Scruggs and Terry Bauckham had a sense of power in their right hand.
That's bluegrass champ Brian Anderson of Sonora. You'll hear him play in our studio. First, the news. From KXJZ in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, America's bluegrass banjo champion lives in Sonora. You'll hear Brian Anderson describe the essence of good bluegrass banjo playing. He plucks a few tunes in our studio, too. First, Wales is a small country with a big reputation for singing. A lot of big voices have come from the Welsh Valleys, like opera singer Bryn Terfel and pop singers Tom Jones and Shirley Bassey. Welsh towns and even coal mines are famous for their choirs. And so, one of the world's great choral festivals is in Wales too. It's the Llangollen International Musical Eisteddfod. Llangollen is the town where the festival is based. It's not spelled like it sounds. It's Llangollen. I called Wales this morning to confirm the pronunciation. Eisteddfod is a Welsh word meaning an arts festival. The Llangollen Eisteddfod was founded in 1947 to help promote peace in the aftermath of World War II. Its most famous alumnus is Luciano Pavarotti, who sang in the Eisteddfod in 1955 as a young choir member. A couple of local choirs are heading to Llangollen this year. They're both from Davis. It's the Davis High School Madrigal Singers and the Davis High School Advanced Treble Choir. The Madrigal Singers leave on Saturday. Today, they're in our studio. We'll talk with them and hear some beautiful songs. Let's start with the group's director, Dr. Karen Gardias. Karen, welcome to Insight.
Thank you for letting me be here.
What is a madrigal?
A madrigal, in the popular term or historically?
Well, that's
historically
up to you to define.
A madrigal was a person who sang between the 1450s and 1600s. We try to simulate madrigalists or madrigals through our school. High schools are very positive places to perform madrigals because of the students have the voices for it. There isn't a great deal of vibrato, and the text works for most of them. So we do a combined number of pieces, but
yes,
we're considered madrigals.
So a madrigal was both the singer and the song?
Correct.
Okay. What defines a madrigal? What, when we hear a madrigal song, what would we expect to hear that would tell us perhaps that it's a madrigal?
You would be hearing a cappella music. You would be hearing either sacred or secular, depending on the piece. You wouldn't hear vibrato. It could be anywhere from 4 parts to 8 parts. The music from that period, some of the important composers, Palestrina, Monteverdi, they have their own style just like any other composer would and probably recognize it as a madrigal.
So this is late 16th, early 17th century
music.
Correct. The composers you named were Italian. Is it usually
Correct.
Sung in Italian?
It started in Italy. However, it moved on to throughout Europe. And it's in every language, pretty much German, French, Latin. Latin was very, very popular in those days, too. In fact, we'll be singing our first piece. We'll be in Latin.
Yes. And it will be sung by all these singers that are in a semicircle behind you. How many singers with you?
32.
And is that the whole choir?
That is the whole choir.
Excellent. Well, we're going to hear them now. What is that first song?
Sicu Cervus by Giovanni Palestrina.
Okay.
Sicut Cervus desiderata sanctus
Thank you so much. That was beautiful. My guests are the Davis High School Madrigal singers. Tell us, Karen, what's ahead? The Eisted Fod in Wales starts in July 4th and runs through the 9th, and the Madrigal singers are competing for how many days?
5 days.
Goodness. And tell us a little bit about the competition. What do they have to do?
Well, they start out in an opening parade along with the advanced treble choir. And there are different divisions that we were accepted into. So we have a senior children's, a youth competition, a chamber competition, a folk song competition, and a women's choir division, which would be the advanced treble choir.
And it's quite international. I'm looking at the countries of the choirs you're competing with on Wednesday, the 5th of July, and I see Czech Republic, South Africa, England, Taiwan, Romania, Basque Country, and Wales, of course. It's really all over the place. Have you been to the Eisted Fod in Wales before?
We have never been there. We've always wanted to go. I felt like I won the lottery when we were accepted. We are, I believe, the 7th choir in the state of California in 60 years to get in. So we're pretty excited about it.
And do you know anything about the town of Llangollen?
I actually received an email from a singer in the Detroit Symphony Chorus, which is the only other choir from the U.S. going. And she has been before, and she mentioned that the whole town is about 4 blocks long. So it should be interesting to see.
So with all these thousands of singers and other performers from all around the world, pretty much they'll take over the town.
They will take over the town.
But willingly so.
Definitely.
Great. Let's talk with a few of the singers. We have Lucy Fitzgibbon, Alan Presley, and Joey Bennett. If you could all just step up, please. And the song is absolutely wonderful. If you could all move in a little closer to the microphone, that would be great. Thanks so much. How do you feel about going to Wales, Lucy?
Oh, it's really exciting. We're all 3-year seniors. We've been in the choir since our sophomore year. And we traveled to Australia 2 years ago, and it's so exciting to get to go on another international trip and get to see all these different singers from all over the world.
How do you expect to be received when you get there?
I don't know exactly, because, I mean, internationally we may not be looked on with a great light, at least at times like this, but hopefully we'll just be accepted as singers, just for the music.
So a lot of well-known choirs competing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about your costumes. Our listeners don't know what you're wearing, but you're wearing Renaissance costumes. Is that fair? tell us about them, Ellen.
When we're accepted into the choir after a rigorous audition program, we get to design our own Renaissance costumes. They're styled in the 1500s, Elizabethan period, and they're all slightly different but fit the criteria. We are assigned a velveteen color, so the bulk of our costume is velveteen. And then we usually have a brocade. For girls, guys, we have knee-length pants. And then our doublets, which are our tops, and headgear. So.
And tights. Yeah.
And
the
tights
for
the guys.
So. Joey, where did you come up with the design for your costume?
Actually, this is not my costume. my brother designed it when he was in the choir, and then I took his, and then his didn't fit me, so I took a former Madrigal's costume that fits me better. But, yeah.
Are these the kind of outfits that Madrigal singers would have worn, do you know?
Yes.
High-class
Madrigal
singers. Yes. High-class Madrigal.
Of course. More noble style clothing, as opposed to more lowly.
You do look very aristocratic. And will you be wearing these costumes when you're in Wales?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're also competing in a folk song division, so we had to have a folk song costume as well. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of a prairie-like...
Yeah, 1800s.
So we're wearing brocade skirts. The girls are wearing brocade skirts and blouses. The guys are wearing Levi's and...
Wow,
that's
a lot of extra clothing to take along.
And West Side Story.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Lucy Fitzgibbon, Alan Presley, and Joey Bennett. Good luck. So, Karen, time for another song. What's the second song that the Madrigal singers are going to give us?
We will be singing A Boy and a Girl. It's a piece by Eric Whitaker. He is a composer in Southern California, and... young composer, very challenging music that he writes.
I thought it didn't sound like Renaissance at all.
No, we do a combined group.
How wonderful. Thank you. The song was A Boy and a Girl, and sung by the Davis High School Madrigal Singers. Karen, I'm no singer, but that sounded very difficult to me, in part because of all the silences, and then they come all back in together with no musical accompaniment.
Correct. Yes. It's a very challenging piece. It was written in 2004. All of his works are very similar to this. This was the first time that we actually attempted to do this kind of a piece, was this year. And in fact, we were hoping to get a chance to work with him, but it just didn't work out. But we're really looking forward to performing this piece in Wales.
Does it still have some kind of stylistic connection to Madrigal?
I suppose if you want to think about the fact that most of the madrigals were either written about love or God or drinking, we could go ahead and say it's about love.
Yes.
So.
Thanks so much. Also with us is Mallory Richards, who's student director of the Davis High School Advanced Treble Choir. The Advanced Treble Choir is also going to Wales for the International Eisteddfod. Mallory, you're the student director. Tell us, what is a treble choir?
It's a choir composed of all girls.
And is the treble choir separate from the madrigal singers?
Yeah, there's no crossover between singers. And we sing different kinds of music from the madrigals for the most part.
Such as?
We sing a lot more contemporary pieces. We've sung songs like Build Me Up Buttercup. but we also do sing some sacred music, so.
Yes. You're also competing in the Eisteddfod. When are you competing, and what do you have to do?
excuse me. Well, we're competing in the women's division, so we have the same. It's the same competition, except just against female competitors. So,
how many songs do you have to do?
We're singing 3 songs.
And do you know much about the competition?
Not really. It's a big honor. I know that much.
Yes. I note that you have in your itinerary that you have a concert the day you arrive. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, Karen's nodding. Yeah. So not a lot of time to get your Welsh feet together.
No.
Okay, well, very good. Mallory, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, more from the Davis Madrigal Singers on their way to Wales. We'll go to our break with some music from the Advanced Treble Choir, also going to Wales. It's Psalm 23. Listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Next week is one of the world's great music festivals, the Llangollen International Musical Eisteddfod in Wales. 2 local choirs will participate. They're both from Davis High School in Davis, the Madrigal Singers and the Advanced Treble Choir. The Madrigal Singers are in our studio. There's another live song coming up in a couple of minutes, but let's take a couple of minutes to talk with 2 of the parents of members of the Madrigal Singers. They're Linda Bewer-Elstab and Robbie Murphy. Linda and Robbie, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Linda, I hear that you're the tour coordinator.
Yes, I am.
Tell us about the logistics of putting this together. It's a big deal.
We have been working on this since October, and I work a little on it every day, but it's big. We have 151 people going, and total between the 2 choirs support group, we have children going, siblings, grandparents in wheelchairs, meeting aunts and uncles, and we're action-packed. We just got our final itinerary finalized last night about midnight, and we're ready.
It's got to be expensive.
Actually, it was very reasonable. Our students are paying $2,000, and we subsidized half the cost for each student for a 2-week trip.
And when I was talking with 3 of the singers earlier, they described how they have to take this costume, the Renaissance costume, and another costume for the folk contest, plus all the regular stuff. So just the baggage alone must be enormous.
We have, their costumes are precious, so their costumes will be in their checked luggage so they don't lose them. They actually have three costumes. They're also singing the opening ceremony's West Side Story. So we've learned how to pack. Some of our parent meetings, we've been showing them how to pack, how to roll, how to buy crinkly clothes, how to unsteam or unwrinkle your clothes. So,
very good. And Robbie, you're also a parent?
I am, yep.
How many singers are you a parent of?
My daughter, Shannon Murphy.
Very good. Are you going to go to Wales?
I'm not. My husband is going to go as a chaperone, and I will be joining them at the end of their tour.
Yeah. How do you feel about their chances?
Oh, I think they have an enormous, chance to come home with the gold, so to speak.
Yes. Yes. And excellent. Are you going to be able to keep in touch with the people in Wales?
Everybody's working on coordinating their cell phones and go phones and all the ways to stay connected. It's been a lot of planning.
Very good. Well, thank you both, and good luck to you. I know it must be a lot of work on the parents as well as the singers. So thank you very much, Linda Bewer Elstab and Robbie Murphy.
Thank you.
Karen Gardius, how have you all been preparing? Have you ramped up your usual rehearsal schedule?
We have been preparing since we heard that we got in, which wasn't that long ago. We actually received word over Thanksgiving. Most choirs, they prepare in advance, planning to go to Europe, and then if they get in, they end up doing this. We weren't planning to go to Europe, so this was a major change for us. When we got in, we just decided, okay, we have to leave. So since November, we've been preparing, and this week especially, we're gearing up.
What's the last song we'll hear?
The last song we're going to sing for you today is My Soul's Been Anchored in the Lord by Moses Hogan.
Very nice. Let's hear it. Wonderful. Thank you so much. The Davis High School Madrigal Singers. Karen, before you leave, the choirs, both the Madrigal Singers and the Advanced Treble Choir, have a farewell concert. When is it?
this evening at 7 p.m. at St. James Church in Davis.
And so both choirs will be singing together or separately?
Separately and then together with a joint piece at the end.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I wish you all the very best in Wales.
Thank you so much for having us.
That's Karen Gardia. She's director of both the Madrigal Singers and the Advanced Treble Choir at Davis High School. We'll go out with some more music from the Davis High School Madrigal Singers. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, bluegrass banjo champion Brian Anderson lives in Sonora. He tells us the secrets of great bluegrass banjo playing and performs in our studio. We'll be right back. Listening to Insight from KXJZ, I'm Jeffrey Callison. Every year around September, bluegrass musicians and fans from across America and other countries too head to Winfield, Kansas for the Walnut Valley Festival. Competitions determine champions in the key bluegrass instruments like fiddle, auto harp, and mandolin. The current bluegrass banjo champion lives in our area. He's Brian Anderson of Sonora. Most musicians take years to climb up the Walnut Valley Festival ranks. He won in his first outing. Brian stopped by our studio recently with banjo in hand. I asked him what makes for a great bluegrass banjo player.
Well, probably a sense of timing is the most important thing, and a sense of drive. All the great bluegrass banjo players like Earl Scruggs and J.D. Crowe and Terry Bockham had a sense of power in their right hand and drive. You really get your sense of rhythm and timing from your right hand. The left hand is just the peripheral magic stuff, but the right hand gives it that beat and that timing.
You talked about the drive and the energy in the right hand. Is there something similar in the guitar, or is the banjo really quite a different instrument?
It's really quite a different instrument. You use three picks with the right hand, a thumb pick and two finger picks, and you're constantly moving the finger picks. With a guitar, you usually have one thumb or one pick, and you just either strum, or if you're doing lead work, you pick quickly with it. But this is using three fingers all at the same time, and so it's quite a different instrument.
Is the banjo in part a percussion instrument as well?
Well, it has a drum head on it.
Yes.
Like a drum, but you don't play it as you would a drum. You don't pound on
it.
Sure. So it's kind of a cross between a stringed instrument and a percussion instrument, although it sounds more like a stringed instrument.
Yeah, indeed. It's just that driving rhythm that it has is so important to the instrument.
Right. Yeah.
You won the Bluegrass Banjo Championship at the Walnut Valley Festival last year, and mm-hmm. that's in Winfield, Kansas. Tell us about that festival. How important is it?
Well, it's actually the biggest contest in the nation. I had always kind of dreamed of going back there and playing, never ever hoping or even expecting that I would place or win. But I was fortunate enough to go back my first time and actually win the contest.
Your first time there, you won?
Yes, last September.
When I looked at the at previous winners, you see the same names cropping up time and time again. These guys who are third 3 years in a row, and then second 3 years in a row, and then they fade backwards. What did you have going for you that allowed you to win first time you went in?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. I just played my best. I played one original tune, one jazz tune, and then two bluegrass standards. And I suppose the judges like the tone and the timing that I was playing with, and I put a couple of fancy triplets in my songs towards the end to make it stand out a little bit, and I suppose that was enough.
What did the guys who've been doing this for years make of you coming in and winning like that?
They were kind of surprised.
Yeah?
Yeah, I played against one fellow who had won the national championship in 99. He placed third, and also against the fellow that placed third last year. He placed second. So I was playing against some pretty stiff competition. Yeah,
you told us the kinds of songs that you played when you competed in the banjo championship, and you said that you played an original.
Yes,
one that you wrote yourself.
Yes,
and what style is that? Is it still bluegrass?
It's semi-bluegrass. When I play it in our band, I have a trio called Brian Anderson and the New Generation. When we play that song, it's kind of a jazzy, bluesy kind of a number. But I could go to a bluegrass festival and introduce that song in a jam session, and they wouldn't have a problem with it.
What song was that?
It's called The Mozambique Rag.
Can you give us a verse or two?
Sure.
Mozambique.
Well, actually, I couldn't come up with a name for this tune, and I was performing at the Columbia Fiddle and Banjo Contest about 3 years ago, and I entered that tune in the contest, and I had two other guys playing with me, a guitar player and a djembe player. And as we were playing this, we got into this really neat rhythm, and in my mind, I was thinking, this looks to me like an African dance, people just dancing around a fire in Africa. And when I said that, the guy playing the djembe said, well, why don't you call it the Mozambique Rag? And it stuck, and so that's what I named it.
Was that the first song you played when you were competing in the championship?
Actually, I don't remember. It was one of the first two. Yes, I played that one in NOLA.
Well, the reason why I ask is that bluegrass is a traditional music form. How many of the people who compete in championships like Walnut Valley play original songs, and how many people stick with traditional pieces?
Probably about half and half would play an original tune. Yeah. As long as it's fairly close to a bluegrass standard or bluegrass rhythm, then it's fine.
Well, how do you define that? What makes bluegrass bluegrass?
Well, it's pretty straightforward in terms of rhythm. You wouldn't have modified rhythms. It'd be pretty straightforward on the beat. Fairly quick, up-tempo, a lot of 16th notes. Usually there's some bluesy things like that would be more of a blues run than that'd be melodic. So when Bill Monroe came up with bluegrass, he used a lot of the blues, but put it into more of a straightforward up-tempo clip and came out bluegrass.
And when you say 16th notes, give us an example of what you mean.
Okay. That'd be 16th. Eighth notes would be slower. Those are 16th. So, those are all 16th notes. So they're quick up-tempo notes.
Where does bluegrass come from?
Bill Monroe is the father of bluegrass music. He invented the sound back in the 40s, the 30s and 40s. He started out as country music. He had an upright bass player, fiddle, mandolin, and guitar. And then in about the mid-40s, he added a banjo. Earl Scruggs was the first real bluegrass banjo player for Bill Monroe, and that defined the sound right there. So it's kind of a cross between blues and country, and it's all acoustic.
You said that you also played a jazz song or a jazzy song when you were competing in the Walnut Valley Valley Festival Championship. What song was that?
It was called NOLA.
NOLA.
It's a tune that was written in the early 1900s specifically for the banjo. And it's sort of, the banjo went out of style, went out of vogue for quite a number of years. And then Bill Keith actually was the fellow that brought this piece back into the repertoire. And it's a great number.
Can you give us a bit of NOLA?
Sure. Thank you.
How close is that considered to be to bluegrass? Is that sort of a subset of bluegrass, or is it going off a bit?
You wouldn't really describe that as bluegrass music.
Yeah. But still, that was considered okay for the Bluegrass Championship.
Yes, yeah. It was. And some bluegrass banjo players like Bill Knopf and Bill Keith have played this tune. So it's maybe a bit of a crossover tune where you're entering into a new, different dimension of music, but some of your bluegrass heroes have done it, and so they've paved the way.
Yeah. My guest is Brian Anderson. He's the 2005 Bluegrass Banjo Champion from the Walnut Valley Festival in Kansas. He has a concert tonight at the Black Oak Casino, and that's near Sonora. You also played a couple of bluegrass songs, so give us an example of one of the real bluegrass songs you played when you won the championship.
Okay, this one's called Ground Speed. Earl Scruggs wrote this one.
Okay. Wow. What's the hardest thing about playing bluegrass banjo? How do we know when we're listening to a great bluegrass banjo player? Is it the fancy stuff you did at the end where you're doing even faster than the 16th notes?
Right. That, for me, that would be the most difficult part of that tune, although that's a bit unusual. In that particular song, I combined two different styles of banjo playing. Scruggs style, which I started off at the beginning to try to come as close as I could to Earl Scruggs' original version that he wrote. And then I added a couple versions of my own, which included melodic style, which is like where you're playing like what a fiddle would do, fast melody notes. And so those triplets at the end are all in the melodic style. So I was trying to combine the two styles. So yeah, I would probably say the triplets were the most difficult part of that.
What's the role of the banjo in a bluegrass band? Is the banjo the lead instrument?
Sometimes it can play backup or it can play lead. It all depends on the flavor of the song. On a lot of slower songs, it does a lot of backup. On the more up-tempo songs, most of the time it'll take a lead part.
Your banjo is a five-string banjo, which
yes.
is the classic style of banjo, although mm-hmm. I think you get other kinds with more or less strings. Why is the fifth string shorter than the others?
Well, it's tuned higher than the rest, and so that actually the highest note is on the top of the banjo.
Which is the opposite of a guitar.
That's right. So, well, how would I describe it? The note or the string closest to my body is the highest note, and then it's the lowest right after that. That's a D, and then a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. But if you want the highest note, you have to go back up to the top and hit that. And it acts sort of like a drone, what's the instrument over in Ireland? The bagpipes.
Bagpipes of a drone.
They use that drone. This kind of acts like a drone, that high note. So whatever chord you're going to, when you hit that fifth string, it acts like a drone and keeps you in the key of G, which is tuned to a G chord.
Do you play the guitar?
Yes.
Is it awkward moving from the guitar to the banjo because the guitar strings, you know, move in a methodical way from bass to the highest?
It's not awkward at all since I've been playing both for many, many years.
Yes. When did you start playing the banjo?
I started in about 1977.
So you were how old then?
I was 17. I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you play instruments before that?
I played a guitar for a year or two before that. But I had always loved the banjo.
Yeah.
The banjo and the saxophone were always my favorite instruments, and I hoped that someday I'd learn to play one or the other.
Banjo, saxophone, saxophone, banjo.
Yeah. I had a friend that played the banjo, so when he was willing to show me a few things, I decided to try the banjo. And I just loved the sound of it.
What did you like about the banjo so much?
There's something magical to my ears about the tone that a banjo makes that no other instrument even comes close. If you hear Earl Scruggs playing on some of his original early songs, like the Foggy Mountain Banjo album, there's just something catchy. It's hard to describe, but there's something almost magical about the sound, I think, of a banjo.
Yes. And it's certainly a toe-tapping instrument.
Oh, yeah. It's a happy instrument.
Yes.
It's hard to play a sad song on a banjo.
Did you like bluegrass at that time?
Yes. Uh-huh. I like the instrumental form of bluegrass even more than the vocals.
And
so I would, because I like the sound of the instruments just playing tunes. For me, that's what I love the most about the music, is just playing instrumental music.
You played banjo when you were younger, and then you basically took about 22 years off.
Yes.
Why did you take so long off of the banjo, and what were you doing?
I got very involved in Christian ministry. I was a pastor for 10 years, and I also got married and started to have children, and I was investing a lot of my time into my family. So I decided that at that period of my time or my life, I needed to set aside time for both my ministry and my family. And so I would get my banjo out maybe every 3 or 4 months and just pick on it a little bit. But there was no real serious intent to play.
Did any of your congregation say, hey, play your banjo in the service?
Occasionally, yeah. Once in a while, I would take it out. But it was kind of a rare thing, yeah.
And what has changed now that has allowed you to get back into playing the banjo?
Well, we moved up to Sonora, and I was no longer a full-time pastor. I'm planting house churches up there. I have my own business, a window cleaning business. My kids were a lot older, and they were occupied doing other things. And so because my ministry changed and my family needs changed, I had more time to go back to an old love.
What was it like when you made the decision to go back to playing the banjo? Did it take you a while to make that decision?
No. What happened is that I went to a jam session, and they really loved my playing, and I found out, I kind of rediscovered my love for the music and the instrument. And so it was kind of natural, actually, at that time, just to begin playing again.
And that was just a few years ago.
Yes.
And it was just a few years after that that you won the championship. Could you have imagined back in 2001 when you picked up the banjo again that you'd be the national champion?
Absolutely not. I can still almost, I can hardly even imagine today, even after it's happened.
You have an album out and your band includes your son.
Yes, it does.
So the proof that your family is not impeding your banjo playing.
There you go. That's true.
And is that bluegrass that you're playing with the band?
It's actually not. It's more of jazz and blues and Celtic. It's hard to describe because I don't really know anyone else who's playing something just like it. We've written all the tunes on the album, and so they kind of have our own flavor to them. But there's a couple of them that are kind of Irish sounding, one that's kind of New Agey sounding, several of them that are jazzy and bluesy.
Great. Well, could you perhaps take us out with one more song?
Sure.
What would it be?
I'll play an old fiddle tune called the Dixie Hoedown.
Okay. Wow, that is amazing. That was Dixie Hoedown. Brian Anderson, thanks so much for coming in today.
You bet. Thank you.
Brian Anderson's trio is in concert tonight at the Black Oak Casino in Tuolumne, east of Sonora. You'll see a picture of Brian triumphant at the 2005 Walnut Valley Festival on our webpage, capradio.org/insight. Also there, a picture of him playing in our studio and links to more information about our previous guests, the Davis High School Madrigal Singers, and to the music festival they're headed to in Wales, the Llangollen International Musical Eisteddfod. You'll see how to spell Llangollen, but not how to pronounce it. That's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up on the KXJZ stations, reporters are free to cover the 2006 World Cup any way they like, but that may not be so in the 2008 Olympics if Chinese authorities have their way. Press freedom in China. That story and the day's news next on The World. Today's associate producer was Anna Reeder. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Also engineering today was John Florek. Insight's senior producer is Benjamin Jonas Keeling. Thank you for joining us. Jeffrey Callison. Next time on Insight, we'll celebrate camp as we learn about a Sacramento festival dedicated to B-movies. Also, how you could benefit from a library specializing in the law, and images of the 60s counterculture. A local photographer tells the stories behind his pictures of Bob Dylan, Allen Ginsberg, and Jim Morrison. Join me for Insight.
Friday afternoon at 2 on the KXJZ stations.